All right, we'll say good morning. Our shiur this morning is sponsored by Michael and Marcy Langbaum in the merit of a refuah shlemer for Yoshua Raniel Ben Eliana Golda. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his surgery will be successful and will have a complete and enduring refuah. All right, so let's begin. So today's daf is Mem Gimel. We are picking up actually like a little bit mid-discussion, Esvei. So it's actually on Mem Beis, Amud Beis. So we're starting 43 today. We're picking up on 42b. Esvei 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara says the following. Esvei. So let's remember again, we're in the middle of a fundamental machlokes in Shimon Rabbanan about when you go ahead and if you are, let's say, Amad Bedin, if you've already had your case adjudicated, and then, or I should say differently, the case that we're really fundamentally arguing about is the following. Reuven says to Shimon, you violated my daughter, you were brought to Beis Din, and you were found guilty. Shimon says, I swear that that is not correct. Then it turns out that Shimon swore falsely. So the Shailin now is, what's the impact of his Hoda'ah, of his admission on... What's the impact of his admission on the karbon and on the knas? So essentially, Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that a knas remains a knas even after there is a verdict from Beis Din, and therefore when you deny the knas, when you admit the knas later on, you're going to be pater from the karbon. As opposed to the Rabbanon who say that after a verdict is delivered, the knas transforms into mamon. Therefore, it turns out that when you swore falsely, you denied a monetary claim, and because you denied a monetary claim, therefore what? Therefore, you are going to be subject to a karbon. So the Gemara says, "Esvei Rabbi Shimon." Excuse me, "Esvei." The Gemara is Zekasha. Rabbi Shimon Poter She'eno Mishalim Kenas Apiatzmo. Rabbi Shimon says you're parted from the karbon. Why? Because he still calls it a kenas, and you can't pay a kenas based on your own admission. I will say, remember, they're not arguing as much in the money as much as they are arguing on the karbon. So because you wouldn't pay the kenas on your own, therefore, again, your denial of the claim is not considered to be denial of a monetary claim, rather denial of a kenas claim, and therefore no karbon. Now, the reason we assume this is true in the Braise is because he has not yet gone to Beis Din. Ha Amad Bedin, but if he did go to Beis Din, to Mishalim Apiatzmo, Karban Shvua, Nami Mechayiv. But if there already was an Amida Bedin, the adjudication of the case, it would appear that Lamaisi, even though he denied the claim, he would be Chayiv a Karban. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Devarim Drabana Kamalahu. In reality, Rabbi Shimon is addressing the Rabbanon. How so? Rabbi Shimon says like this, Lididi, according to me, this is Rabbi Shimon talking, according to me, see, according to me, even though there was Amid Bedin, I still say that when you deny a knas, remember, now when you deny that you have been made liable to that knas in Beis Din, you are still potter from the karban based on the drasha of Ikichesh, which we had in yesterday's daf. But you, Rabbanon, at least agree with me. Amad Bedin, that when there was no Amida Bedin, right? When there was not an adjudication of this case in court. That ultimately, again, when the father is claiming, when Reuven, the father, is claiming against Shimon, he's really claiming ultimately the knas. And therefore, again, top of Mem Gimel, umode b'knas potter. And therefore, if there was no Amida Bedin, so meaning that would be a case then where Reuven is saying to Shimon, you violated my daughter, right? And now you're chayiv to pay the various things, and Shimon denies it. And then first he swears falsely. Then he says, I admit that I did it, that should be a case of Moda Beknas and Potter. But Rabbanan Savi, the Rabbanan say, no, Ki Katav, this is actually very interesting, Boshe Supegam Katav. And Rabbanan say, now we're getting to the meat and potatoes of this. So the Rabbanan will say, not true. When Reuven, the father of the girl, approaches Shimon and says, Shimon, you violated my daughter, what is he really demanding of Shimon? He's really demanding of Shimon Boshes and Pigam. So I'll say now what's coming out of here is the following. It would appear that if there was a case of Amida Badin, In the case of Amida Badin, so everyone is going to go ahead, I should say differently. In the case of Amida Badin, there'll be a machlokis between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanim. But when there was no Amida Badin, remember the distinction between the case of Amida Badin and not Amida Badin is whether or not Reuven, the father of the girl, claims that the case was adjudicated in front of Beis Din. That's called Amida Badin. So Rabbi Shimon says to Rabbanon, at least admit to me in a case where there was no Amida Badin, meaning that when Reuven says to Shimon, you violated my daughter, and Shimon says, no, I didn't, and I swear I didn't. Then Shimon admits that he swore falsely. So Rabbi Shimon will say, at least admit to me that in that case, Shimon will be pater. Why? Because then he's modi. He's modi that he did it. He admits that he did it after he swore falsely. And modi b'knas pater. And the Rabbanan say, no, he's not pater. You know why? Because the primary part of Reuven's claim, Reuven the father of the girl, he's not claiming the knas. You know what he's claiming? He's claiming boshes and pegam. So the Gemara says, "B'maikam efkis." So we'll see. Now what it comes out is that the machlokes in Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon is that when the father of the girl makes the claim against Shimon, what is the primary part of his claim? So according to Rabbi Shimon, the primary part of his claim is knas, it's penalty payment. According to the Rabbanon, the primary part of his claim is boshes and pegam. So what are they arguing about? Amar Papa Rabbi Shimon Saver, this is very interesting. Lo Shavik Inish Midi Dikits, Dikits, Dikayits, or Dikits, yeah, Dikits, the Tava Midi Dilokits. So Rabbi Shimon will say like this. Rabbi say, the father of the girl has two claims against Shimon. What are the two claims? Say, so he has a claim of Kinas, and he has a claim of Boshes and Pegam. Rabbi say, what's the difference between those two claims? So Kinas is a set amount, it's a fixed amount. Boshes and Pegam is subjective. Rabbi say, what's going to happen once you get into subjective amounts? What's going to happen? Right? So there's going to be machlokis about it. So Rabbi Shimon therefore says, when someone comes with a financial claim against another that his daughter was violated, what he's really going after from the perpetrator is the knas. The knas is the primary thing that he's after. Why? Because it's established. Because it's finite, because it's indisputable. However, Rabbanan Savri, lo shavik inish midi dechimodi be lo miftar, vetave midi dechimodi be miftar. Rabbanan on the other hand say, no. When the father claims against the perpetrator, what is he really claiming? He's really claiming boshes and pegam. Why? Because the truth is, he's never really going after Knas all that aggressively. Why not? Because at the end of the day, if it turns out that Shimon admits that he does it, what's the impact on the Knas? Your potter. Now, we'll say, obviously, there's entitlement to both. There's entitlement to both Knas and boshes and pegam. The shayl, the fundamental machlokes, seems to be like, what are they primarily pursuing? And again, Rabbi Shimon will say they're primarily pursuing, ultimately, they are primarily pursuing Knas, because Knas is the fixed amount, Boshes and Pegam is the variable amount. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon will say that when the perpetrator ultimately admits, he's Pater because Modu the Knas Pater, whereas Rabbanu will say, no, what the father of the girl is primarily going after is what? Boshes and Pegam. Because Knas is always the great variable. Knas is a greater variable than Boshes and Pegam. Why? Because if he admits it, ultimately he's going to be Pater. Therefore, the primary essence of the claim is Boshes and Pegam, which is Mamon, which is why even when Shimon subsequently admits, after lying falsely, that he violated the girl, that the Rabbanu will say he's still Chayiv.
But I mean, they gave us the formula for Boshes and Pegam, and it's obviously subjective, but is there any discussion about an average amount? What's the amount compared to the Knas?
Oh, meaning how did it compare to the 50 shekel? Yeah. So the problem is, we don't even get into that because everything depends on the standing of the girl. Let me put it like this. 50 silver shekelim is a lot of money. Is a lot of money. And the raya to that, remember, is the fact that, according to many opinions, that took the place of the ksuva. So the fact that the penalty payment is almost the same value as the ksuva is indicative of the heightened value. I would venture to say, just based on what we've seen, that boshes epigai would usually be certainly a lower amount. That was, the knas was the higher amount.
But doesn't the ksuva become 100 instead of 200?
No, that was, Howard, I think you were in New York that day. You didn't listen to the daf while you were driving?
I did.
Okay, Baruch Hashem, good. So we'll see. So no, that's a fundamental machlokes. So the machlokes over there is what happens to the ksuva when you get this payment. So we saw that there was one opinion that said, like what you just said, that the ksuva, again, still retains its either 100 or 200 amount, depending on her status, right? But others say that the knas payment takes the place of the ksuva. No, if she's violated by this man, he marries her. So as a mach, right? He has to marry her. No, not if everybody agrees. Only if he doesn't have a say. So the assumption of that's the discussion of a ksuva over here. We're not discussing about a ksuva to another man. The Gemara is only discussing a ksuva vis-a-vis the perpetrator. Good. By mine Rabbi Avina me Rav Sheshes. So Rabbi Avina asked Rav Sheshes the following. Bas hanizones mina achin. So if a daughter ultimately is supported from her brothers, so this is a situation now where father died, and what happened? The daughter is being supported by the estate. So what is the halacha? Ma'aseya dehalumi. So who gets her earnings? So we'll say now she's generating earnings. So what happens when who gets those earnings? So bimakom av kaimi. So the Gemara says, on one hand we could say, bimkom av kaimi. Do we say that the brothers who are now running the estate essentially take the place of the father? And we say, ma'hasa ma'aseya de'ala av. Just like when her father was alive, her father got her earnings. So now her earnings go to her brothers. Oh, Dilma lo dami laav. Or perhaps again we say no, the brothers are not like the father. Because why does the father get the earnings of his daughter? Because lemaisa he is supporting her from his own estate. Hacha lav midido misina. But here the brothers are not supporting her from their estate. Meaning it's not their money, it's not their estate, it's the father's money. So maybe maase adeha only is given when. When lemaisa again, the father is supporting the daughter because again he's laying out the money. Therefore, he gets her maaseh yadah. The brothers are not laying out any money; they're just giving of their father's money to the daughter, and therefore maybe they're not entitled to it. Amar le tinisua, we learned it. Amana nizonis minichsei yisomim, and amana a widow is supported from the property of the yisomim. So both I remember. Now this is a case just to understand. Whenever the Gemara talks about Amana doesn't have to be the mother of these children, right? Amana just means the wife of the deceased. So whether she's the mother of the children or not the mother of the children is irrelevant. So an Amana is supported from the property of the Yisomim, from the property of the orphans, Uma'aseya de'ashalahen, and meaning the orphans, the estate, get her earnings. So what do you see from here? Just like an Amana is supported from the estate, and the estate gets her earnings, so too I would say that a girl, a daughter who is supported from the estate also gets her earnings, to which the Gemara says, Midami, how can you compare those cases? Almanasala nechale baharvacha, bito nechale baharvacha. Maybe you could say like this. The truth is, the reason why the Amana has to give back her earnings is because it's not right that she should profit at the expense of the estate. Meaning, if the estate is supporting her, then she ultimately should give her earnings back to the estate as a way of offsetting those expenses. That's for an Amana. But for a daughter, a father has absolutely no problems with his daughter going ahead and profiting at the expense of the estate. Meaning that when the father sets in place the obligation to support his daughter from his estate, he has no problem if she gets supported plus keeps her earnings. Does that mean to say lememra, to be to adif alei ma'amanasa? So we'll say, what you seem to be saying over here is that a man wants to take greater care of his daughter than he does of his widow. Meaning for his widow, if she's supported from the estate, he wants her earnings to go back into the estate. But for his daughter, he has no problems if she gets supported as well as keeps her earnings. To which the Gemara says, "V'ham Rabbi Abba Rabbi Yosi." Rabbi Abba said to Rabbi Yosi, "Asu amana itzal habas." The rabbis went ahead and made the status of an amana compared to a daughter, kibas itzal ha'achin, like a daughter compared to her brothers. What does that mean? Binechasin mu'atin. When it comes to limited properties, what does this mean? Rabbi Yosi, "Mahabas itzal ha'achin habas nizonis va'achin yishol ha'psochim." So we'll say if there's limited amount, we actually will see this later on. We actually made reference to this in Yevamos, that if you have an estate with limited amount of property, and what happens, and now there's not enough to support everyone, so who gets supported? The girls, the daughters are supported, and if the brothers need to go, literally, Yishol HaPsachim means let them go out and beg, which is another way of saying they have to go figure it out. The girls are supported from the estate, the boys have to go figure it out. Af amana itzal habas. So we'll say the same thing is true. Let's say there's limited amount of money in the estate, and the estate has to support a widow and a daughter. Amana nizonis v'habas tishal apsachim. The amana gets supported, and let the daughter go out and beg. So we'll say, what do you see from there? You see from there that an amana is treated with greater care than the daughter. And yet, so we'll say, so now we have contradictory inferences. On one hand, On one hand, we said before that, when it comes to earnings, so a man wants his widow's earnings to come back to the estate, but yet he's happy to let his daughter keep her earnings, even though she's being supported. And yet here we see that if there's limited assets, it is the widow is supported, and the daughter has to go out and figure it out. To which the Gemara says, Le'inyan zilusa amana swadifa. No, when it comes to matters of degradation, so the amana is treated with greater care. Le'inyan harvacha bito adifale. When it comes to profiting, so the daughter is treated with different care. In other words, what the Gemara essentially answers is, it's apples and oranges. Obviously, to have to go out and beg is a degradation. We would rather the younger person deal with the degradation of having to go out and beg. Then the older person, the assumption is that the bas, the daughter, is younger than the amana. So as such, we treat the kavod of the amana with greater care than the kavod of the daughter. On the other hand, when it comes to actually financial profiting, so a man has a closer connection with his daughter than he does with his spouse, than he does with his widow. And therefore, the mice, when it comes to the widow, we're happy to support you, but your earnings have to go back to the estate. But daughter, he has no problems with her keeping the earnings. Massive Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef went ahead and raises a kasha. Ma'aseh adem mitziasa, af apish lo gavsa, meisav harehin shel achin. Abba say, now actually, Rav Yosef quotes from our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? That if a girl generated income, ma'aseh adem, she generated income during her lifetime, u'mitziasa, or she finds an item, af apish lo gavsa, even though she has not yet collected it. So we'll discuss exactly how that case comes up in a mitziah, but at least in an earnings case, it's very simple. She gets paid on the 15th of the month, father dies on the 13th of the month. So what is the halacha? The Mishnah says, any money that she has earned is already considered to be the property of the money, of the father. And therefore, when the father dies, that money goes biyerusha to the sons. Even though what? Even though the money has not yet been collected, it's only been accrued. Taima de bechaye ha'av. Now the reason for that is because this happened during the lifetime of the father. Meaning, why does her earnings go to the estate or go to the father? Because the father was alive. Ha la'achem misas ha'av li'atzma. But yet again, after the father died, what can we infer from here? That she would be permitted to keep her earnings. My love, bini zonis. Is this not referring to a case where she is supported by the estate? To which the Gemara says, lo, b'she'inu nizonis. No, it's in a case where what? Where she is not supported by the estate. So I'm supposed to say, I don't understand. If she's not supported by the estate, so of course she keeps her earnings. Meaning, what's the havamina to say that if she's not supported by the estate, that she wouldn't keep her earnings? Even according to the opinion who says that when it comes to an eved, and we'll see this in Bava Metzia, that when it comes to an eved, so a master could say to his eved, you have to work for me, but I am not going to support you. I'm not going to support you. However, delok siv be imach, because by an eved rabosai, it doesn't say the word imach, doesn't say v'chay imach that you have to support him. Aval eved ivri dichsiv be imach lo kol shekein. Excuse me. Aval eved ivri dichsiv be imach lo. So we'll say again. See, even according to Mandam, who says that with your eved kanani, you could say to him, you have to work for me, and I'm not going to support you. Meaning, go figure out your support on your own. A person can say that to his eved ivri because he has an obligation to support his eved ivri. Kol shekein bito. All the more so, what your daughter. So I will say. So therefore, obviously, in a case where the estate is not supporting the daughter, I don't need the Gemara to tell me that she could keep her earnings. Of course, she could keep her earnings. Amar Rabba Bar Ula Lo Nitzucha Elal Adafa. Oh, I'll tell you where it applies. I will say it applies to the extra earnings. Hadafa. Look at Rashi. Liot lahadafa liolam ladiuka delay. It's trich lashmo inon de maasi adala achar misas avli atzma. So Rabbi says. So again, really, what the Gemara is telling us is like this: that halacha lemaisa, when the father dies, so the maasi yadayim. Ultimately, after the father dies, the ma'aseh adayim is hers. The ila ashmo inon higufa dema she'asasa b'chaya av la'achim. Pshit, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong Rashi. Ubishainon nizonis de lotema zechush zichsator li av bito mamonu, larisha lebanim. Udekashi lechabemaitis zon, halo gara me evet ivri, So listen to this. Study this outside. So the Gemara is saying is like this. In a case where she's not supported by the estate, so I don't have to, Gemara doesn't have to teach me that she keeps to, gets to keep her ma'asei adayim, that she gets to keep her earnings. Because obviously, I will say, if there's no support, she keeps her earnings. What's the chiddush? The chiddush is hadafa. I will say, hadafa means additional amounts. For example, let's say for argument's sake, the amount of her support per month is $500, but she's earning $750. That $250 is called hadafa. So I might have thought that in a situation where ultimately, again, she's not being supported by the estate, she keeps the $500, but perhaps the $250 goes back to the estate as an entitlement that was inherited by the father. Kamash Malon, no. Kamash Malon, ultimately, that when she is not being supported by the estate, so of course, neither the amount that she needs for her support nor any additional amounts actually go into the estate. Amar Rava, Rava said, Gavra Rabba Krav Yosef lo yada di'ika hadafa. So do you think that a great man like Rav Yosef didn't know about this hadafa, and yet he still asked the question? Ela amarava, amarava, Rav Yosef masnisin gufa kashile. Rather says Rava, Rav Yosef was bothered by the Mishnah. Viktani, because on one hand, what does the Mishnah say? Ma'ase yadeha umitziyasa, afa pi shalo gavsa. And Rav said, what did the Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said that any earnings that she has earned, but she has not yet collected, or anything that she has found, but is not yet collected, ultimately, during the lifetime of the father, belongs to the father. If the father dies, it's inherited by the sons. So the Gemara says, Mitziyasa miman gavya. Now, I will say, now I understand when it says that you have something that has not yet been collected by the case of earnings. Because as we said before, that could easily happen. I've earned the money, so to speak. It's accrued, but I have not yet collected. But in the case of Mitziya, a found object, what does it mean that hasn't been collected? Rather, the Gemara says, Elav hachikam. Rather, this is what it means to say. Ma'aseyadeh ki mitziyasa. A girl's earnings are just like an item that she finds. Ma mitziyasa b'chaye ha'av la'av. We'll say, if a girl finds an object during her father's lifetime, so who does the object belong to? It belongs to her father. However, li'achar misa sa'av li'atzma. But after her father dies, then what? The object belongs to her. Meaning, we'll say, but that's is very important. A father has a certain level of kinyan, a certain level of ownership over his daughter. How do we know that? In the same way that he has the ability to give her away in marriage, that shows he has a certain level of ownership over. Obviously, it's only until she reaches Bagrus. Once she becomes a Bulgaria, she's on her own. But the Maisa, until she reaches, he has a certain level of ownership. That ownership also manifests itself in the fact that he has control over her yad. So really, if you want to understand what the tension is over here, the Shaila is, if the father passes away while the daughter is, let's say, still a child, either a Ketana or a Nara, does he pass on his rights in her yad to his sons, to his estate? That is the fundamental shaila. Does he pass his paternal rights, does he give his paternal rights to the estate, to the sons? So the Gemara apparently says, Rabbi Shimon will say, no. And the proof is, just like if she finds something, the only time that object becomes her father's is during her father's lifetime. But once her father dies, she gets the rights in her hand. Her hand becomes hers. And therefore, when she finds something, it's hers. Af ma'aseyadeh. The same thing is with her earnings. Af ma'aseyadeh nami b'chayi ha'av la'av. When the father is alive, the earnings go to the father. Li'acha misa sa'av. Liatzma. After the father dies, however, Rabbi Osai, her rights and her earnings do not pass down to her brothers, to the estate. Rather, she retains her own earnings. And Rabbi Osai, that is true even when she's being supported by the estate. Because obviously, if she's not being supported by the estate, you know, in amal adaber, nothing to talk about in that situation. But even when she is being supported by the estate, her earnings become her own. And Rabbi Osai, this stands in contradistinction to who? To the amana. Because by the amana, again, if you accept support from the estate, you have to plow your earnings back into the estate. But by the daughter, ultimately, again, she gets to keep her earnings after her father's death. So the Gemara says, Shmamina. Indeed, this is the case. Itmar Nami, we state this as well. Amar Abihuda, Amar Rav, Bas Hanizonis Mina Achin. If a daughter is being supported by the brothers, and Rabbi Osai, remember again, by the brothers means what? By the estate that the brothers have inherited, She gets to keep her earnings. Amar Rav Kana, my time, what's the reason for that? What's the reason why she gets to keep her earnings? Supposed to say, this is talking about an Eved Kenani. So the Torah said that by the Eved Kenani, you shall give it over as a nachala, as an inheritance to your children after you. The idea is that an Eved Kenani passes over in Yerusha from father to son. Osam Livnechem, Avodim, you can go ahead and give over to your children. V'lo b'no sechem livnechem. But I've also listened to this. A father does not give over his inheritance to his sons. Magid, she'ein adam moresh zechus bito libno. Oh, here it's explicit. Explicitly stated, a father does not give over his rights in his daughter to his inheritors. And therefore, again, Lemaisa, when father dies, ultimately, the same way she will get to keep any object that she finds, he's also able to watch. She also gets to keep her Maasei Yadayim. Maskif lo Rabba, Rabba raised the kasha, Ve'ema bepitui habas uknasos vechavalos hakas medaber. Maybe when it says that a father does not give over, does not inherit, you inherit something. What does it mean if you give over something? Bequeath. Okay, good. That a father does not bequeath, thank you. Maybe when it says that a father does not bequeath his rights in his daughter, what is that referring to? That's referring to pitoy or knossos, chavalos, refers to certain things like certain knossos, either again if she's seduced or other knossos or other injuries which the father would normally get, the sons slash brothers will not. The chintana Rav Chanina. And in fact, again, Rabbi Hanina actually interpreted this way, Rabosai, that Lamaisa father cannot bequeath his rights in his daughter's penalty payments. However, again, Chavalos, the Gemara says Chavalos, Sarah de Gufaninu. Well, of course, Rabosai, if she gets injured, of course the brothers are not going to get that. Why? Because that's her own personal injury. No one else is going to get her own personal injury. Rashi says over here, Tzara de Gufahi, who Vitzara Nami lo Zachil Rachman la'av. Well, this is actually very interesting. We'll see this in Baba Kama, but apparently, again, a father may have rights in many things. One thing he does not have rights on is what's called chavalos. Chavalos are any injury payments that she gets paid for injuries inflicted upon her. That remains hers because that is the pain that she inflicted. In fact, essentially what the Gemara in Baba Kama says is that any injury payments, the father has to put into a, for lack of a better term, I guess it's a trust. He puts it in a trust that he is not permitted to touch, that ultimately becomes hers upon reaching adulthood. So Amrab Yosef, so we'll say, when can you have a case of where there's a havamina that maybe what, that maybe he should be entitled to chavalos, shepatza befaneha, where the injury she receives is she gets injured on her face. And Rabbi said the chab is if she gets injured on her face, that could also cause what? That could also cause pigam. That could also cause depreciation. And because of that, ultimately, that is something that directly affects the father. Amar Rab Zera, Amar Rab Masna, Amar Rav. Varmili Amar Rab Zera, Amar Rab Masna, Amar Rav. Basani Zonis Mina Achin. So we'll say, again, if a daughter is supported by the brothers from the estate, Maasya Del Atzma, she gets to keep her earnings. Dichsiv, Vesnachaltem Osam Livnechem Acharechem, because the Pasuk says, by an Eved Kenani, you shall give it over as an inheritance to your sons after you. Osam Livnechem, it is only avodim that are bequeathed from father to son. But a father does not bequeath the rights of his daughters to his sons. Magid she'ein adam morish zechus bito libno teaches us that a man may not bequeath the rights that he has in his daughters to his sons. Amrale avimi bar papi. Avimi bar papi said shakud amra. So we'll say shakud means like the smart one. Right, the shakdon, the smart one. The smart one said this. So the Gemara says, who's the shakud? Shakud man, who's the smart one? Shmuel. And Shmuel, what do you mean Shmuel said it? The Gemara just said Rav said it. So why are you saying Shmuel said it if Rav said it? Ema af shakud amr. Rather say even the shakud, even the diligent one, the smart one, said it as well. Amr mar bara meimar ravashi, hachi amri nardoi. This is what the nardoim said. Hilchasa kavase de Rav Sheshes. The halacha follows of Sheshes. The halacha follows of Sheshes. Rav Yomer, Hilchasa kavase de Rav. Rav Ashi said, no, the halacha follows Rav. The Hilchasa kavase de Rav. And bottom line, Rabosai, is that the halacha follows Rav, which means what? That a father does not bequeath his rights in his daughter to his sons. Therefore, When father dies and the daughter is a minor daughter, two major things happen. Number one, she gets to keep whatever she finds. Her metziah is hers. Number two, she gets to keep her earnings, even if what? Even if she is being supported by the estate. Because those are specific paternal rights, and those paternal rights do not pass down to the sons. And that is halacha lemaisa. As opposed, again, to, as we said before, as opposed to the almana, who is entitled to support from the estate, but whose ma'asadam, whose earnings, must be plowed back into the estate. So says the Mishnah, Hama'ari says pito, vigirsha, irsa, v'nisar malo. So we'll say this is, and now the truth is, now we're going to get into a little bit more about what Howard raised before, so which we have not discussed until now, which is the idea about the impact of her ksuva on subsequent marriages. So we'll say, so right now, up until now, we spoke about her ksuva with her, if she were to marry her violator. What about ksuva in terms of if she gets married to someone other than the violator? So now we're going to get into that sugya. So Baruch Shekivanta. So the Gemara says, Ma'ari says pito vigirsha. So a man goes ahead and does erusin with his daughter. No, that actually did not make sense. No. Ma'ari says pito, he married off his daughter. Right? He married off his daughter, vigirsha, and then she was divorced. So I both said, just keep track of where she's getting divorced from. So right now she's getting divorced from erusin. And then what happens? Irsa, she got him, she was betrothed another time, erusin a second time, Vinis Armala, and she's widowed the second time. But I both say both times the marriage has been dissolved in erusin. So first marriage was divorced, ended in divorce from erusin. Second marriage ended in the death of the husband during erusin. So what's the halacha? Ksuvasa shalom. So the Mishnah says that the ksuva ultimately again belongs to the father. Okay, we'll see what that means. Hisia vigirsha, hisia v'nisar. And I'll say case number two is where what? Father marries off his daughter, nisuin. First marriage ends in divorce, and second marriage ends in her husband dying. What's the halacha? Ksuva sa shala. The ksuva is hers. The ksuva is hers. Okay. The ksuva is hers. However, Rabbi Huda says, Harishon Shalav, the first ksuva belongs to the father, and the second ksuva belongs to the daughter. Amrulo, imeshesia, not true, once a father marries off his daughter in Nisuin, Ein la'avia rishus ba. The father has absolutely no rights in anything, in any financial matters, or in any financial things, any financial entitlements that the daughter may have. Fine. So we'll say, now let's analyze this. So taima, so first of all, the Gemara begins on a totally different fixation. Taima de'esia v'girsha esia v'nesal. And I remember, what was the case? The case in both Erisin and Isuin was, from the first marriage, she was divorced. And second marriage, she was widowed. Just in the first part of the Mishnah, she was divorced and widowed from Erisin. Second part of the Mishnah, she was divorced and widowed from Nisuin. So the Gemara says something very interesting. Taima de siya vigirsha siya venes armala, avanis armala tre zimni, su lo chazilin subi. I will say, it's interesting. Why does the Mishnah set it up that way? Why doesn't the Mishnah just make it symmetrical? Both husbands died, right? Why doesn't it just say that? Oh, I'll tell you why. Because if both husbands died, Rabbi say, what would be the halacha? She would no longer be permitted to marry. Why? Why? Because Rabbi say, that's what's called a katlanis. A katlanis is a woman. If you look at Rashi, sulo chazin and subid dehavye chazok alios bala amesim. So I guess we would call this today colloquially, call it a black widow, right? So the idea over here is, if every single man who she marries dies, so it raises some concerns about her. About her, and therefore the ma'is, again, that is the fundamental machlokas, about how many husbands do you have to kill in order to go ahead and be called the black widow. So there's a machlokas in the Gemara about whether or not it's two or three. So the Gemara says, you see from the Mishnah that what? That apparently the Mishnah subscribes to the idea, the Agav Orchei Kasasan Latana Kirebi, that our Mishnah seems to be holding like Rebbe, the Amar Betray Zimni Havya Chazaka. Because I will say, Rebbe says that two times Kirebi Chazaka. Now, I want to be clear, Rebbe doesn't just say this by the Black Widow case, by the Katlanis. There's a fundamental machlokas by Chazaka in general about how many times you need a particular occurrence to happen in order to establish it as a Chazaka. Rebbe says two. Everyone else says three. The Gemara is just pointing out over here what we call Agav Orche. So I say Agav Orche means sometimes that the Gemara will just teach us something that has nothing to do with the primary topic being discussed, but it just teaches it to us in passing. So the Gemara is just teaching it to us in passing over here that this Mishnah holds like Rebbe, that Chazaka is established through two times, and therefore we want to set up the case of where one husband divorces her, one husband dies, because if both husbands die, then what? there's no possibility for a third marriage. Just agav urche, the Gemara is telling us that this Tana holds like Rebbe. Now, Bosai, again, we'll get to this, but lav dafka that we hold like Rebbe, but this Mishnah is reflecting the view of Rebbe. Okay, Rebbe Huda Omer Harishon Shlav. So, Bosai, remember, Rebbe Huda said that, and this is an interesting case. Remember, father marries off the daughter, she has nisuin. First marriage, husband divorces her. Then she gets remarried a second time, and nisuin also husband dies. What did Rabbi Huda say? First ksuva is the father's. Second ksuva is the girl's. So the Gemara says, "By time, Rabbi Huda." What's Rabbi Huda's logic? Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both say, "Hoil umishas irusin zocha bohena av." So it's actually very interesting that the Gemara is saying over here that Lamaisa, since the father essentially became entitled to the ksuva at the Shas Erusin, therefore it's his. Now what's going on? If you look at Rashi, so the Mishas Erusin shall balari shon es chayiv lo ksuva. From the time that she had Erusin with the first husband, he became liable to an ksuva. V'zacha ba'av, and the father became entitled to it. Aval be'irus and sheni lo zacha to mishani says the rishon pakas zechusim inayin. Both say now what the Gemara is saying over here is the following, that what this Mishnah actually holds is that there is yesh ksuva la'arusa, that there is, because remember again the Mishnah presupposes that there is a ksuva obligation during erusin, which we will see not everybody agrees to, but the Mishnah is explaining that as soon as a man does erusin with a woman, there is an obligation for erusin. So let's play this out. When the father is marrying off his daughter, she's a ketana. I mean, ketana slash nara, right? Whatever status she is, the point is she's not a bogera. She's not an adult. So when father goes ahead and accepts kesef kiddushin for her, so at that point in time, she's still a minor, still a ketana or a nara. And at that point in time, the moment that he accepts kesef kiddushin, the husband becomes liable to ksuva. Who is entitled to the ksuva at that moment? Who is entitled to the ksuva? The father. Because Lamaisa, at that moment during Erusin, he is still entitled to her earnings through Maase Yadah. So once the entitlement for ksuva sets in at Erusin, the father himself is entitled to it. However, once she gets married, once a girl has nisuin, even if that marriage subsequently is dissolved, a father no longer has any financial rights in his daughter, even if she is still a nara. Therefore, when she gets married the second time, the father has absolutely no entitlement in her ksuva at all. That's the shita of Rabbi Huda. So a father is entitled to the first ksuva. And again, I want to be clear, this is only in a case where a father is marrying off a minor daughter, ketana or nara. So since the obligation for ksuva begins at erusin, and the father still has financial rights in his daughter's erusin, therefore he's entitled to ksuva number one, but he's not entitled to ksuva number two. Masiv Rava, Sarava Rezikasha, Rabbi Huda Omer, Harishona Shalav. Rabbi Huda says the first ksuva is the property of the father. Umod Rabbi Huda b'ma'ares espito shiketana. But yet Rabbi Huda agrees in what case? That if a man accepts kesef kiddushin for his daughter when she is a ketana, ubagra, but then she becomes a bogeres, v'achar kach nise. So Rabbi says, listen to this case. He accepts kesef kiddushin when she's a nara, but she becomes a bogeres before nisuin. And then she becomes a bogeres, then she gets married, nisuin. She'ein la'aviha reshus ba. That the father has absolutely no rights in her. Then I both say, now that what does that sound like? That sounds like that if her husband dies or divorces her, then what? The ksuva would be whose? The ksuva would be the girl's and not the father's. So what's the pshat? So amai, hachinami lema, hoyul mishas erusin zachabana av. So why don't you say something we just said before? Before we just said that lemaisa again, as soon as erusin occurs, there is an obligation for ksuva. As soon as obligation for ksuva begins, she's still a ketana, father is entitled to it. Why? Who cares if she becomes a bogeres before nisuin or not? Rather, you have to say like this. Rabbi Rav Yosef, Dami Tarvayu, Hoil ubrishuso nechtavin umigva. Umigva me'imaskavya. So we'll say, listen to this. So the Gemara says, Hoil, well actually, let me read that differently. Hoil ubershuso nechtavin. So what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Hoil ubershuso nechtavin. Ksuva harishona shaya lefnei hanisuin. Vehilchach bagra kodem nisuin. Lo nechtav bershuso ha. Lo nechshav bershuso. Ha di garsina nechtavin lashon rabim amana umasayim di ksuva kare. Let's listen to this. So the Gemara says like this. And this is where it's going to get a little bit more complicated. Apparently, again, there are two different points in time here. Point number one is where a ksuva obligation is generated. And when is a ksuva obligation generated? When is it generated? At the time of Nisuin. Time of Nisuin. Kiddushin. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Eris in Kiddushin. But interestingly enough, often the ksuva itself was not written until when? Until closer to the Nisuin. So therefore, I will say like this. Essentially like this, if the ksuva is written at the beginning of Erisin, and she's still a kitana, then Einachinami, who's going to be entitled to the ksuva? The father. But if the ksuva is not written until closer to Nisuin, and by that point in time she has already become a bogeres, then who is going to be entitled to the ksuva? The girl. Even though, what? Now the novelty in that is what? Even though the obligation for ksuva was generated earlier, right? Even though the obligation for ksuva really occurs at the moment that he gives the girl kesef kiddushin, gives the father kesef kiddushin, but essentially entitlement is determined at the time that the document is written. So the Gemara says, umigva me'emas. So we'll say, so now what we've established is, this is really very interesting. And by the way, you see also, we see this theme keep coming up again in terms of at what point in time is entitlement determined? Is entitlement determined at the time that the obligation comes up? Or is entitlement determined at the time that the document is drafted? And I will say, by the way, to further complicate things, we know that there were places where ksuva documents were not written at all. They didn't write ksuvas. It was just a known obligation. So we'll get into that as well. So what the Gemara is suggesting is like this. Lamaisa, the ksuva obligation begins at the time of Erisin, which again, remember, not everybody agrees to it either. But yet, determining who's entitled to it will be determined, in determining who is entitled to collect the ksuva, that will be dependent on when the document was written. So if the document was written after already she became a bogeres, then Lamaisa, she gets to keep it. But if it was if the document was written before she became a bogeres, then Einachinami, the father, will get to keep it as well. So the Gemara says, however, umigva me'emas gavya. But I will say, now here's the fundamental shadow. With this, maybe we'll stop. But, well, actually, let's go a little bit weiter. So migva me'emas gavya means like this. So now, what about collection? What about collection? So we'll say, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Ubigva me'emas gavya kilomar le'inyan zichia da'av da'achazinan de'lav basar erisin azlinan afil Rabbi Yehuda diktani mod Rabbi Yehuda b'ma'aris izbitu abagra alma basar ksiva azil le'inyan mitraf lekuchos me'emas tarfa me'mishibadi mishas erisin da'ami ahi shayte chayi betakanta derab on odilma atshas ksiva da'avya malve b'shtar lo tarfa. So listen to this. So now we get into a more complicated shayla. So now the question is, from what date is she permitted to go ahead and collect property? So let's fast forward a little bit. Let's say they divorce. And now she's entitled to collect her ksuva. Husband says, I'm bankrupt. I have no money. Can't pay your ksuva. So remember, what is a woman entitled to do? A woman is entitled to collect properties that husband sold during the marriage in order to satisfy her ksuva debt. The shaila now is, from what point in time is she permitted to go back and seize sold properties? Do we say that since the obligation of her ksuva began when? Erisin. Began at Erisin. So we look at the date of the Erisin as the beginning of the time from which she is permitted to go out and collect sold properties. Or do we say that no, since there was a document, essentially her right to collect sold properties begins when? Because at the time of the date of the document, the time of the ksuva itself. So we'll end off with that kash, and Amir Tz Hashem, we'll pick up with that tomorrow.